Warren, how about you? What's the economy look like from where you sit?
Well, right now, there's no question that it's feeling strong. I mean, if we're in the sixth inning, we have our sluggers coming to bat right now, number 3, 4, and 5 in the lineup. There's no question in my mind that America is going to be far ahead of where we are now, 10, 20, and 30 years from now. But right now, business is good. There's no question about it.
The sheer fact that the leaders of the United States and North Korea are meeting for the first time in history itself does have symbolic significance. But given the short period of time for preparation, I don't think it's likely to have a kind of comprehensive package deal like the one we had in 2005 or 1994.
You know, if you think about what's happening in the world around us, computing is being embedded in every place and everything, and that world is being built by developers. In fact, there's a LinkedIn stat which shows that development in non-tech companies or developers in non-tech companies like retail or energy is growing by double digits and 25% higher growth rate there than even in the tech companies. So that just shows that we are in the very early innings of what is going to be a set of tools and SaaS services that are required to empower every developer out there.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's June 8th, 2018, 5:11 in the morning. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. On the broadcast today, it's our regular Friday conversations with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. We're going to be talking about the economy and the markets and our portfolios a little bit later in the program. Brian Summers, fresh off of a big trip to Australia, is here from Skift, and we'll have some airline transportation business news for you. That's coming up at 5:40. But first, let's begin with the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward opening losses later this morning on Wall Street as the G7 nations get ready for their meeting in Canada. And trade tensions build. Dow futures are off 165 points. NASDAQ futures are down about 17 points, and 671 points, I should say. S&P futures are off that 17 number. Around the globe, markets in Europe also reacting to the G7 summit and these trade tensions. In London, the market is lower by almost 1%. The same story in Germany. In France, off about a third. Germany off nearly 138 points, more than 1% this morning. In Asia, markets are also in the red. The Hang Seng off nearly 560 points. The Nikkei lower by about 0.5%. Oil this morning is trading at $65.63 a barrel. That's down about 32 cents. A couple of stories that we're watching for you this morning. As we mentioned, the annual Group of Seven meeting of industrialized nations is getting underway, and we're expecting tough trade talks as the go-it-alone policies of the U.S. leaving this country increasingly isolated, along with President Trump, who heads there today. On the eve of the gathering, French President Emmanuel Macron and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau previewed what will likely be a tense 2 days. They stressed the need for respectful dialogue, but say they'll push back against new U.S. tariffs on steel and aluminum imports, as they have on other issues. During a news conference yesterday, Macron at one point said the countries are prepared to move on without the United States, as perhaps the G6. Trump administration says in a new court filing it will no longer defend key parts of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, including the requirement that people have health insurance and provisions that guarantee access to health insurance, regardless of any medical conditions. The Thursday decision is a rare departure from the Justice Department's practice of defending federal laws in court. As a matter of fact, it is so rare that we're still looking for a couple of other cases that this has happened in. Texas and other states, including Illinois, are suing to Texas and other states, I should say, are suing to strike down that law. But other states, at least a dozen or more of them, including Illinois, will be the lone defenders on this without the Justice Department going forward. And American cities accounted for 96% of the country's job growth in 2017, as they added nearly 2 million jobs, according to the latest annual report from a bipartisan coalition of mayors. The U.S. Conference of Mayors, which is gathering in Boston starting today, says in its latest Metro Economies report that 10 metropolitan areas generated $6.8 trillion in economic value in 2017, surpassing the output of most states. Those metro regions include, as you might expect, New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago. It is a Friday, and it's our regular Friday conversation with Paul Nolte this morning. He's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management. And Paul is with us on the phone this morning, probably on his yacht somewhere. Paul, good morning.
Not so much, but by the water nonetheless.
Where do we begin this morning? I guess maybe with the G7, perhaps soon to be the G6?
Yeah, trade is front and center, and it's one of the concerns that the markets have had for at least a little while. They put to the back burner here over the last month or so, but as events get closer, the markets get a little bit more nervous about it, and part of the reason why we're seeing the sell-off this morning. And what's interesting about it is when you take a look at the reaction in the markets, obviously the market indices are down, but when you start taking a look at below the surface, the dollar is actually very strong today. The dollar had been weaker the last 3 or 4 days. And when we got the report on import and export price, or imports and exports, our imports were down a little bit, our exports were higher, which is what the Trump administration is trying to achieve, but that came on the back of a weaker dollar. We've had a strong dollar over the last month or so. We may see some of those reverse here when we get the next report next month. So the dollar, I think, is going to be the key indices to watch as opposed to the S&P 500 or the Dow. Keep your eye on the dollar and how that's moving.
Paul, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about whether we're headed for a trade war, actually in one already. And I know we've had this conversation before here on the program. Mexico's put in place some tariffs, retaliatory tariffs now on the U.S., and Canada's done the same, the European Union. At what point does it actually become a trade war? Can we start calling it that?
I think we've got probably about 3-4 months before we can actually call it an all-out war. The policies have been just announced. Some haven't even been put in place yet. And it's going to take some time to see what the impact will be on the economies going forward. There's a lot of moving parts to trade. It's a very complicated, very intertwined discussion when we start talking about trade. As we talked about yesterday or last week when we talked about the trade tariffs with aluminum and steel, we have U.S. companies that are have plants in Canada or in Mexico that will be impacted by these tariffs. So you're actually hurting U.S. companies that have set up plants abroad. So it's going to be probably a couple months before we're able to see some of the impacts come through in a lot of the economic numbers, but we are certainly heading down toward a much more, not a very pleasant policy, let's put it that way, when it comes to trade.
Paul, hang on with us. We're going to come back with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. It's our regular Friday conversation here in the opening bell with Paul, and we'll have more with him.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Stocks closed mixed Thursday, the Dow ending in positive territory, the NASDAQ and S&P closing down. A mea culpa from Facebook. The social network says a software glitch made private posts public for as many as 14 million users last month. Google pledging it won't use artificial intelligence in surveillance or weapons apps. The announcement on the heels of a decision not to renew a contract with the Pentagon in which AI helped analyze drone footage. Google recently announced Duplex, a human-sounding digital concierge that books appointments with receptionists. Amazon's new Fire TV Cube streaming device will let users shout when they want to turn on their TV or change the channel without touching the remote. It'll be available next month. Michelle Franz in ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, we're looking at the board this morning. Futures off about 145 on the Dow, but you've been kind of watching these stocks every day, and it's not really as bad as these numbers today would indicate, is it?
No, it's been really very much a sideways but still very volatile market. And it's really been led by the technology stocks on the upside and small cap stocks. There's been a huge divergence between the small U.S. stocks, which tend to be insulated from all these trade talks that we were just talking about, and a lot of the multinational companies, which you tend to find in the S&P 500. And then the flip side of that is what we're seeing overseas. The markets there are down maybe 1% to 2% last month. So you had maybe a 6 to 8 percentage point difference between international market performance and small cap U.S. So as these trade talks continue and we see all the headlines and everything else, the part of the market in the United States that actually seems to be a little bit insulated from this are smaller U.S. stocks, because they're not impacted by trade. A lot of their trade goes across border from Illinois to Indiana as opposed to from Illinois to China or to Europe. So those are a couple parts of the market that might be insulated from some of these discussions.
What does the summer historically tell us about the markets? What should we expect as the summer months kick in here?
Summer in the living is very easy on Wall Street. Historically, the summer months tend to be very sideways. And again, similar to what we've experienced just in the last couple of weeks, somewhat volatile, but generally a pattern where you see the markets peak out in the month of May and tend to bottom out, you know, around Halloween. So it gets into the fall where the markets generally have been a very flat over the summer months. There's not a lot of traders that are around. Everybody takes a vacation during the summertime. And the news flow tends to be a little bit slower. Washington tends to take their vacation as well. So there's not as much news going on that's really going to drive the market. And that's what makes this G7 a little bit more unusual and puts a little bit more volatility here in the market. But normally during the summer months, you can see the markets tail off and volume dry up.
And I thought it was kind of interesting. You noted that in the foreign markets, they're watching the World Cup. And so a lot of investors in the foreign desks may not actually be at their desks.
No, that's true. And, you know, funny enough, we saw in Chicago a couple of years ago when the Cubs were in the World Series. Activity in the Chicago area really kind of dried up. It's very true in the World Cup. It's very much a global event, not so much in the United States, but certainly around the world. And it's something that a lot of people take a great interest in. And you tend to see trading activity drop off and certainly a lot of people taking time off. Or, you know, like the NCAA tournaments here in the United States, they'll have the computers up watching the markets, but one other screen will have the sporting event on. So, again, it's a very split mind and focus and tends to add to the summer doldrums.
What do you like here at the end of the week? Where would you put your money?
You know, as odd as it is, we still do like the international markets. It's been kind of a rough go, but we do like the U.S. still, and more in the technology area. Technology will have some impact on trade, as we're hearing from all the various discussions. But technology stocks in general have continued their strength over the last couple of years. So we still like a focus to large cap growth here in the United States, have some sprinkling of international. And then finally, we're starting to see commodity prices pick up here a little bit. So, you know, a good diversified commodity fund that invests in companies that are mining, doing the oil exploration, et cetera, look good here.
All right, Paul, have a good weekend, safe travels, and we'll see you again next Friday.
Absolutely. We'll talk then.
All right, Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find out more about Paul and his colleagues at kingsview.com.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by chicagoinno.com. Two locations in Chicago have been chosen for Amazon Go, the retail giant's high-tech convenience store that operates without checkout lines, according to the Chicago Tribune. One will be in the Willis Tower and another in the office building that's connected to the Ogilvy Transportation Center. Petal, a beverage startup born in Chicago, is making a new rosewater-based sparkling beverage similar to a tea drink. It's an all-organic drink made with zero caffeine, calories, and sugar. The main ingredient is rosewater, and it's naturally sweetened with stevia. And according to data from Realtor.com, Amazon's Jeff Bezos is so rich, he's worth $112 billion, that he could buy every one of the 50,000 current active home listings in Chicago five times over. But that's nothing compared to some other markets, like Essex, New Jersey, where Bezos could buy every current listing nearly 88 times over. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. We turn our conversation now to aviation and travel and you flying on airplanes with Brian Summers of Skift.com. He's the airline business reporter for Skift and is with us this morning, as he is every Friday, via Skype from Los Angeles. Brian, let's begin with Delta and its CEO comments about competition from low-cost airlines making transatlantic trips and competing with Delta. What is he saying?
Yeah, Delta CEO was at an investor conference last week, and he basically said, you know what, we're not that concerned by the threat of low-cost, long-haul discount airlines, like the most famous one being Norwegian Air. There's another one, Wow Air, in Iceland. Look, there's no doubt that passengers love these airlines. Flights are relatively cheap to Europe. The deals are great. So you would think that airlines like United, Delta, American would be fearful, and sometimes they are. But Delta CEO Ed Bastian, as you mentioned, said last week, look, we all pay the same amount for fuel. The prices of fuel are going up. And, you know, Norwegian just doesn't have that big of a cost advantage on an airline like Delta. So that's one thing. And the other thing is Delta, American, and United, they all have these big business class cabins. And especially in business class, with the economy being as good as it is, these big time airlines can just raise the prices of business class and they can pretty well cover the cost of that fuel. If you're in Chicago and you want to go to Barcelona this year or next year, maybe you're happy to pay $400 one way or $300 one way to go to but if the price goes up a couple hundred dollars because Norwegian needs more money for fuel, maybe you decide you want to go somewhere else and you don't go to Europe at all.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can see that. But I have to tell you, I've heard from a lot of people who are flying these airlines and taking these trips, especially, for instance, on WOW. I know a lot of people that have been flying on WOW airlines. So there is some kind of threat there that's ongoing, isn't there?
Yeah, there's no doubt that people like cheap fares. I think the long-term question is, can an airline like WOW make money with these cheap fares? Because if fuel prices keep going up, and fuel is a big cost for every airline, WOW is not going to be able to charge $199 from Chicago or whatever it is today to Europe and still make money. And the question is, you know, WOW Air is always going to be cheaper than United, American, and Delta. I get that. But when fuel prices go up, WOW Air is going to have to charge more money for its tickets. And there may be some point where people in Chicago say, yeah, WOW Air is cheaper than United, but it's still pretty expensive. Maybe I don't want to go to Europe this summer. And I think that's what Ed Bastian is talking about.
Yeah. And I guess if you take the fuel prices out of this, like for some reason we start going in the opposite direction back to lower again, I mean, this whole argument may be off.
Yes. I've spent a lot of time with airline executives in the last week, and I can tell you nobody can predict the price of future fuel. And one airline executive told me at this conference last week in Sydney, he said, you know, if we could predict fuel, we would be in a different line of business. We would be predicting the future and be making a lot more money than in the airline business.
The folks that are flying WOW, I don't know if you've had a chance to fly them yet or do one of these trips. I mean, even though it is kind of cramped, it's not like Delta, like you mentioned, the business class, people still seem to don't mind it.
Yeah, apparently they don't mind it. I can't say that I've flown WOW. I haven't even flown Norwegian. It sounds like the people you know are doing pretty well. One thing folks do need to remember is that WOW Air does charge for everything, including bags, I think carry-on bags as well, or at least larger carry-on bags. So you probably have to do the math before you go to make sure that you're actually going to save long money in the long run, but I guess people do.
Another story you wrote is about Qantas Airlines and their plans to fly nonstop from London and New York. What's going on with this story?
Yeah, I don't know if people really realize how far away Australia is from the rest of the world. Of course, I was just there. I got back this week, spent some time with Qantas, and they have never been able to fly nonstop from their biggest cities, that would be Sydney and Melbourne, to Europe, and not only to Europe, but even to places as far as Chicago and New York. So early in the next decade, perhaps as soon as 2022, they're hoping that Airbus or Boeing will build them a long-range plane that would allow them to fly, say, from Sydney to New York or Sydney to London nonstop, and not just nonstop, but with about 300 passengers. And that's important. People don't realize sometimes how much they weigh. But a plane flies farther the lighter than it is. So you could probably fly now maybe with 120 passengers from Sydney to London, but an airline probably wouldn't make money. So we'll see what Boeing and Airbus come up with.
If you can't tell, as you mentioned, Brian just got back from one of these trips. It's not because it's early in the morning. He's a little bit flight jet lagged. Give us a sense, Brian, of what this trip is like. How many hours is it, and what kinds of toll has it taken on you?
We're talking about me personally?
Yeah, well, let's just, if you don't mind.
No, I did just get back from Sydney yesterday. I live in Los Angeles. It's about a 13-hour trip. It's not so bad, but, of course, the jet lag does play games with you sometimes, and I like to pretend that I'm a professional. And one interesting thing is that the airline executives that I cover, they basically pretend that they are not jet lagged, but I know deep down they're feeling it. And I actually flew down with United CEO Oscar Munoz, and he was taking it just like the rest of us.
Do you put toothpicks in your eyes to keep them open? Is that the secret to that, or is it something else?
There's really not much you can do except keep on going on.
Let's go talk about the Boeing aircraft here. Is it going to be something beyond the 787-9? So would we be talking about something that hasn't been developed yet?
No, both Boeing and Airbus have airplanes that, with some changes, can probably do it. It's not the 787. It would be the next generation of the Boeing 777. They're calling it informally the Boeing 777X. It should be able to fly about 18 hours off the shelf, as they say, but Qantas is going to need another 2 or so hours out of it to reach London and New York, and that'll require some performance changes. I suspect they can do it. Airbus also has a plane, the Airbus A350, also with some changes. It could do it, and Qantas is being very smart here. It's putting the aircraft manufacturers against each other and trying to see which one will come up with a better solution.
Another story out there, Air France and KLM are going to stay together.
Yeah, Air France and KLM were actually the first major global airline merger. You know, this is before United and Continental, before Delta and Northwest. This was more than a decade ago. The problem is that unlike in the United States, where we're all Americans and corporate culture might be a little bit different, but everybody's roughly the same, you have a big French company merging with a big Dutch company, and there are like major culture clashes in this company. The French unions are much tougher than the Dutch unions. The Dutch people are very proud of KLM. The French people are very proud of Air France. There's a lot of butting heads going on, and I get the feeling that there's some people in the Netherlands that just wish that their very historic, very proud airline, KLM, could go back and do what it did until about 2004 and be a niche airline. But that's just not going to happen. European airlines have gone through some consolidation. Air France and KLM need each other, and this is just the way it's going to be.
So is this the message to both sides? It's just they've got to suck it up and move forward?
Something like that. The Air France side of the house is actually in some trouble. They don't make nearly as much money as KLM. Again, as I mentioned, they're having some union trouble. So one thing to mention is that, yes, both sides should suck it up. The other side is to say, look, Air France needs to get its act together.
You talk about the employees that are involved here. Are customers or the flyers who are on these airlines noticing any difference?
Well, I'm sure that they are, although there's probably some flyers out there that have no idea that Air France and KLM are one. Certainly flyers would notice that in recent months, Air France has had quite a bit of trouble with employee strikes, and KLM has had a pretty reliable operation.
Brian, always good talk. We'll see you again next Friday.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is airline business reporter for skift.com. Make sure you follow on Twitter at Skift and Brian, too, at Brian Summers. And sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report at skift.com/airline. It arrives via mail. And there's some late-breaking news this morning regarding our conversation with Brian this morning. United Airlines has started charging customers to check a bag on flights to Europe. A spokesperson reporting that yesterday. The fee is part of the new basic economy fare for price-sensitive customers. The company is stripping down its fares and offering services that were once included for free for an extra cost. Adding a bag will now cost $60. United joins now Delta Airlines and American in offering these charging these bag fees to compete with the likes of Norwegian Air and WOW.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures off 156 points as we head to the opening bell later this morning. NASDAQ futures off more than a percent, 73, now 75 points lower, and S&P futures down as well. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture this morning. Orion Samuelson's with us. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you. And it's a little early in the growing season, but we are trading a lot of weather news in the markets, particularly in the wheat market, because we've been getting reports now that there is some crop problems in Ukraine and in Russia and in Australia, and still concerned about crop problems with the wheat in the southern plains. So we're trading weather. Yesterday, soybeans and corn moved lower, but wheat again traded firmer in the trade yesterday, with nearby wheat up 7¾ cents. But soybeans really took it on the chin yesterday, Steve, because the July soybean contract down 20½ cents a bushel. And we're still talking about the good start to the crop, despite some of the challenges we had earlier this spring with too much rain and then not enough rain in the U.S. But right now, crops are off to a very good start.
Orion, a lot of us, we're going to be hearing a lot about trade today and into tomorrow. We've been hearing a lot about trade this past week.
Yeah, right.
As the G7 summit gets underway, but the president is tweeting this morning, and maybe you could give us a little clarification on this, that Canada charges a 270% tariff on dairy products, saying that Canada is not fair to U.S. farmers. What's the real story here, and what's the impact of all of this?
Well, the big trade problem between the U.S. and Canada certainly focuses on dairy, because Canada has a quota system. And if you have a dairy farm and you sell the dairy farm in Canada, you also sell your dairy quota, because a lot of dairy farms are said, you can't produce any more than this. And so that's the big issue, dairy. And I was interested this week. I see that Canada even put maple syrup on the retaliation list with the United States. I didn't realize, but the province of Quebec produces 70% of the world's maple syrup. And we do have trade in maple syrup with Maine providing maple syrup from the U.S. into Canada. And so that's one of the commodities you don't hear much about, but it's used in retaliation as well. One other quick comment, because I get asked this question quite often: how much of our U.S. farm exports are at risk in the trade disputes? Well, they figured it out that it is about 14%. That would be $20 billion of the $140 billion of U.S. farm exports. That does have some risk in what's going to happen to the ability to trade.
Yeah, I just had a ooh boy on that one. That's a big number.
Yeah, it is.
Orion, have a great weekend. We'll be listening to the show tomorrow morning from 5 to 6 with Orion and Max, and we'll see you again next week.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us this morning. Let's check the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday. Today is June 8th. A couple of economic reports that we'll be watching for today, including the Commerce Department report on wholesale trade inventory for April. The Canadian unemployment rate for May is going to be expected today. The Baker Hughes U.S. oil rig count also will be published. Not much else on the calendar today, moving the markets perhaps. We'll be watching, of course, the G7 summit in Canada.